Welcome back to another episode of the Huxley Morton podcast, where this week I am joined by Mike Touche. Mike is currently the CEO at Treadwell Therapeutics. Mike, I already seem to have lost you, seem to have lost the video there, but there you go, you're back on. Welcome to the show. Thanks very much for joining me. Look, before we come on to Treadwell, I guess in true Huxley Morton podcast fashion, let's just rewind a little bit because, you know, clearly you're the CEO at the moment at Treadwell Therapeutics, and we'll get on to what that is all about as a business. But first of all, how did you get into, I guess, this crazy world of pharmaceuticals, biotech, clinical research? Because, it's a vast one and not everyone chose it. But yeah, what's your initial background, Mike?
So point of clarification, I serve as the co-CEO of Treadwell Therapeutics. Mm-hmm. So that's the first point. The story of how I got here, I often tell people that the reason I'm here doing what I do is because of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Right.
And that may seem a bit odd, but, as a young buck in like high school and college, I was always very interested in STEM pursuits, you know, science, technology, math, with kind of a focus on biology. I wanted to go to medical school. That was kind of the goal, right?
Yeah.
And oftentimes if you're in the life sciences and, you know, you excel, that's kind of the path that you're kind of put on, right? That's what everyone around you who's, you know, an advisor at school will tell you to do, right? So I was in college along that route throughout my life, I've always been, as we've spoken about before, James, I've always been interested in the martial arts.
Mm.
Right? And I got into that because when I was very young, I really liked the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
And it's back in fashion now, the turtles.
Like, exactly. You know. So because of them, those four young turtles, I was into martial arts and I was really into Japanese culture. I studied the language. And around the time that I was, you know, moving towards graduation, I wanted to do something different and I wanted some life experience. So I got involved with this organization that allows for Canadian students. I'm Canadian by background.
Yeah.
Allows for Canadian students to go work abroad in Japan.
Nice.
So I did that. And I actually was fortunate enough to land a job at Bayer Pharmaceuticals in Japan. They had a research outpost in Kyoto, which is a very beautiful area of the country.
Nice.
So I got a job there and quite honestly, absolutely loved it. Being involved in kind of early stage drug discovery really opened my eyes to kind of what one can do in this space, right? It totally reframed my career at that stage. Like I mentioned, I wanted to go to medical school. And then through this role, I was like, you know what? I want to work in the pharmaceutical sector.
Mm.
And because of that, I wanted to go back to grad school and do a PhD.
Wow.
Right. And then subsequent to that, move back into the pharmaceutical industry.
So, right? It sounds like there's a bit of travel there already, Mike. What age were you when all this was going on and kind of heading overseas?
I was in my early 20s.
Okay,
I was like 21, 22.
Yeah, nice.
Right? And so, you know, I learned about a certain laboratory in the University of Toronto that was headed up by a very, very famous immunologist that kind of guided some of the work that we were doing at Bayer Kyoto at the time, and ended up going to that lab at the University of Toronto and doing my PhD.
Mm.
And then, you know, fast forward several years later, and I'm thinking about kind of the business of the pharmaceutical space. I do an MBA, and then I move to Wall Street.
Yeah.
Right. So I was an equity analyst at an investment bank in healthcare for a while. And I was a hedge fund manager, where I was investing in biopharmaceutical companies broadly. And then kind of moved back to being interested in operational roles. So I started a company with some colleagues at my hedge fund that did really well, invented some drugs that are now in the clinic, and actually showing some really interesting results. And about early 2020, late 2019, I kind of thought about joining Treadwell Therapeutics, which at the time, was it called Treadwell Therapeutics at the time? Yeah, it was actually.
Mm.
And I joined that effort officially in January of 2020. And it's been a really fun, interesting, exciting, rewarding ride since then.
Wow. Cool. I didn't realize there was quite so much to the backstory here, Mike. So how was that overseas gig? Were you overseas for many years? What did you learn on your travels, I guess?
I was in Japan for, call it, about 2 years, just over 2 years.
Yeah.
It was a really great experience. I mean, I was at a point where I was just like, well, maybe I'll just stay here, you know, because wow. I really, really liked it. Right.
Still, but the language skills?
It's, you know what, James, it's like a party trick right now.
Is it?
Right. Like, I've been back there several times since I lived there. And it's like the first couple of days, it's like, it's buried way back here.
Mm.
Eventually it comes out, but it's, you know, it's, I don't use it too much anymore. Right. But yeah, I mean, I was there for about 2 years and it was a great experience. And again, I was just like, I would love to stay here, but then decision to kind of move on with my life and go back to school, and it was the right decision.
Fair enough. Okay, so then you say it was kind of, you ended up on Wall Street. How did you land yourself there again? Like, I'm just thinking of a kind of a grad coming from Canada over to the Asian Pacific region and then landing kind of in Big Bad Wall Street, as it may be. What was that like? Was it a bit of an eye opener? What was going through your head at that time?
So before I finished my PhD, I had inklings of going to business school. So I did an MBA.
Yeah.
And did my MBA whilst I was still working in the laboratory at the University of Toronto. And I really wanted to gain experience kind of in the investing world and kind of the finance world, right? So I did that MBA and you know, me and my partner at the time, you know, thinking about a move. We were both in Toronto at the time and we were contemplating moves to Europe and you know, I managed to land a role at a small kind of boutique investment bank that has since been acquired. But it was a really, really reward. It was a short experience, but it was a really rewarding experience because you learn a lot about what it means to work in that space, right? There's a lot of, you know, the ecosystem is something that's very complicated and you know, you learn a lot about that space. It was on some level a shock to the system because it's obviously very different than working in a lab. But it was really awesome, right? To be honest, like, it was challenging, right? Because it's like, you know, you work very hard in those types of roles. But it really opened my eyes to kind of what was out there. Mm. Right. And moving to the buy side, moving to a hedge fund was like a very much rewarding experience as well. Right.
Yeah.
Because as an investor, basically what you're doing all day is just kind of geeking out on biotech, right? It was that was really, really fun. And I think for me, one of the ways that I view that particular experience is on some level kind of like a training ground for senior management at a biotech company, right? Because on some level you kind of understand, first of all, thematically, you understand what's out there, right? You get a broad view of different companies and different programs and different studies and assets and this, that, and the other. And probably more importantly is that you kind of gain a view in terms of like how management teams should behave and should act, right? You kind of learn from the best of the best, quite honestly.
Was there any specific qualities or characteristics that you started to notice kind of time and time again, whether that was with yourself or with other players in that, you know, circle, as it may be?
In terms of management teams at biotech companies, there's a couple things that stood out to me, right? One was, you know, I really, as an investor, it was great to have management teams that were very responsive, right? What? So it's something that I've kind of just taken to heart in just how I operate as a professional. It's just like, I try to be very responsive to people, whether it be internal stakeholders or external stakeholders. Clarity of message and vision, right? I think it's something that's very important. Communication, right? If the message changes or it fluctuates, sophisticated investors will latch onto that. It's like, well, why is the message changing, right? So consistency of message is something that's really important. So those two things, right? And I also think, like, you know, I think calmness, right? I mean, it sounds very simple, but like if there's management teams that are not calm or they're argumentative or they're kind of combative, then that's a bad sign.
Mm.
Right. So I think it's about communication and message and just a level of calm, right? Mm. That I think is very, very important. Right. And I've seen that consistently. I always remember there was a CEO that was at some European conference.
Mm.
And I sent a message to their IR, and 5 minutes later the CEO was calling me back. And wow. he was like in Copenhagen or something, and it was like 3 o'clock in the morning. Right. and he got back to me, right? And it's just like that's important, right? I mean, I think it's being responsive to stakeholders, internal or external, is to me very, very important, right? And I think that's how I kind of engage with the team here at Treadwell is like responsive, right? Yes, you're the leader. Yes, you're the CEO. But I've always ascribed to the type of leadership where you serve the people that work at your company, right? Not vice versa. It's a situation where you serve them because they do the work, right? They are the people that execute, right? Mm. You just put them in a position where they can execute. So it's almost like you're serving them, not vice versa.
Yeah, no, and I have to agree with you. I guess my experience reaching out to CEOs, senior execs, etc. I often find that the higher you go, the better responses you actually get. People often think it'll be the other way around, but
yeah,
some of the most genuine, fastest responses I tend to get are with the most senior people that people would just think they would not have the time of day for you. So have to agree with you on that.
Well, that's in line with what I've experienced too, James, to be honest. And I think that stems from like experience, even that I've had as a student, right? When I was a graduate student, my PhD supervisor is a very famous kind of scientist.
Mm.
I always count on him to, if I send him an email, for him to be responsive. Right. It may be one word, but that's okay. Right. And I mean, that was the model. Like if that guy has time to respond to an email, then everyone should.
Mm.
So I agree with what I've seen, what you're seeing, right. It's like the higher you go, the more responsive people are. Mm. Right. And the less ego people have.
Sometimes, I mean, it can go both ways, but yeah, definitely is what I find. Okay, so look, you cut your teeth on Wall Street, you learned a lot about the business side of things, how things work, but as you said, you were kind of geeking out on the biotech space over and over and over. What was it? Was there a particular time or event that made you decide, you know what, I want to get back into that? What pulled you back to that, you know, the clinical research, the biotech side of things at that point?
Yeah, look, I mean, a couple things, right? Like, I mean, I think ultimately at the end of the day, I'd always been really, really interested, and really kind of my goal in working in this field is to help people, right? Mm. I mean, I think we've all been touched by people that have, you know, illnesses.
Mm-hmm.
And we can understand and appreciate how this sector can and help people, right? It's, mm-hmm. it's, you know, the biopharmaceutical space is a target politically for a lot of different reasons. But at the end of the day, it's just a big group of people at many different companies just trying to do well, mm-hmm. right? Just trying to do good, trying to achieve something that can help people. Right. So, I mean, I think for me as an investor, you know, you're looking at different companies. Right. And you know, I think that I'm not going to get into details about like a certain experience in the context of this kind of forum, but let's just say that there were certain experiences where, you know, you're basically looking at a certain company. Right. And you see what's going on there. And you see what the company is trying to do,
mm-hmm.
and it's almost like you're watching a football match or something, mm. right? You're sitting in the sidelines and you're cheering from the sidelines, right? And you know, I think what I wanted to do was actually be on the field of play,
gotcha.
If you catch my meaning, right? Mm-hmm. Like you're actually doing it, as opposed to just, you know, assessing it from the outside, which is an important part of the ecosystem, right? If it wasn't for investors, that, you know, this game wouldn't exist, right? So it's obviously an important part of the ecosystem. And I always loved it. right? And additionally, I love interacting with investors. It's a very rewarding part of this job. But you know, I think it was a situation where there was certain kind of companies that I were looking at. It's just like, wow, it would be great to be back in this game, right? To be actually on the field of play as opposed to just assessing it from the sidelines.
Yeah. So you did it. Which, again, a lot of people talk about doing things and say, oh, well, this is what needs to happen. But I guess you pulled the trigger and did it. And was Treadwell the first biotech that you came back to but when you got back into this space, or were you somewhere before?
No. So when I was in the hedge fund game, some of my colleagues there, including my supervisor, my boss, became a dear friend and a mentor. And we were thinking about like what we wanted to do. And I think we both kind of agreed that we wanted to, you know, quote unquote, get back on the field of play.
Yeah.
So I co-founded a company with my mentor at the hedge fund. And that was a company called Nearsome Laboratories. And basically that was a situation where we kind of targeted a particular disease indication. Mm-hmm. We worked together using a lot of external resources to invent a drug, and got that effort funded by the NIH. Mm-hmm. So that was very rewarding as well, because we were literally drawing structures on a whiteboard, and we worked with CDMOs to synthesize those structures and test them and so that was my first foray into kind of like the
what did that feel like then when you first, I guess from being on the investor side to then going to do it yourself and securing funding for something like that, what did that feel like? I mean, it must have been pretty amazing.
Look, man, if I told you when I came down to Wall Street that I would be, writing grants, I would have laughed in your face, because it was like, that's essentially what we did, right? Mm. But look, from an investment thesis, it's an interesting thing to do, because it's like, it's non-dilutive capital, right? So, and there's a certain level of validation that comes from that. Mm. It was the right thing to do. It was a super cool experience, right? And again, it was for a disease area where there is a huge unmet need, right? Like opioid use disorder, which was the focus of the company. Mm. That's obviously a huge and growing public health dilemma, right? And it certainly hasn't been made easier by, COVID, right? It's certainly gotten worse. So it was a great experience, and I'm very happy that we did it, and I'm very happy that it was, on some level fairly successful. Because again, this is an indication where there's really a huge amount of unmet need.
Yeah.
Right. Patient population that's underserved. So it was great to be involved in that.
So is that company still going, still trading, still doing?
It's a private company. But it's still going strong.
Nice. Okay. So from there then, I'm assuming that Treadwell was perhaps the next gig for you personally, as much as that business is still going. For you personally, you then joined Treadwell. And I said, we've touched on Treadwell and what the business has done. I guess I've had a quick look on the website, seeing the kind of oncology focus and some of the science bits on there. But I guess from your words as the co-CEO, what's the Treadwell mission, goal? What's the focus?
Yeah, I mean, the mission is a simple one, right? The mission is to essentially translate novel science and mechanistic insights into tumorigenesis and immuno-oncology into novel medicines for patients in need, right? It's very simple. I mean, I think the history of the organization goes back many years to something called the Campbell Family Institute for Breast Cancer Research in Toronto.
Wow.
So that was an institute that was headed up by one of Treadwell's scientific co-founders, Dr. Tak Mak. And that institute was basically had two aims. One was purely academic research, and the other one was drug development, right? And the team that was developing the drugs at the Campbell Family Institute, headed up by Dr. Mark Bray, another one of Treadwell's co-founders and chief scientific officer, as well as being a good friend of mine that I've known for close to 20 years, was to essentially develop novel drugs, right? Novel mechanisms of action and novel potential medicines for patients in need. That was the goal of the organization, right? So it was a kind of a mission of science to uncover, identify novel targets and then drug them. So that was the kind of the core focus, right? And when Treadwell was founded in July of 2019, it was essentially to further the development of those three small molecules that were in development at Treadwell.
Yeah.
All three were in the clinic, and you can see on Treadwell's website, there's been a lot of presentations of these molecules at medical congresses. The data looks very, very strong. These drugs look active.
Yeah.
So that was the original goal, right? And I think the part of the story of Treadwell involves a venture fund called TO BioVentures that was started by Dr. Tack Mack and Dr. Shane Burgess, who's a great friend of mine, and he serves as the other co-CEO of Treadwell Therapeutics.
So
they started this fund essentially to take control of these small molecule assets because they were developed at an academic institution, the University Health Network, and then build a company around those assets. The idea behind TO BioVentures was essentially a venture creation sort of model. The first foray was kind of Treadwell 1.0, which was the small molecules. Eventually, there's a number of different types of assets that were brought in. There was a cell therapy discovery platform. There was a number of biologics that were brought in. The biologics were actually studied at the Campbell Family Institute by Dr. Bray and team. And that's kind of where we are today with Treadwell, is this multi-modality, multi-candidate pipeline, trying to adjudicate these technologies and move them forward.
So you said it started 2019. Were you kind of in from day one, or did you join shortly after? At what point did you get involved, Mike?
Officially in January of 2020. So that's when I got involved. But like, again, a lot of the kind of the key players involved in this, like Dr. Burgess, Dr. Mack, Dr. Bray, were good friends of mine.
Yeah.
Right. So we'd been talking for a long time about this, about kind of joining the effort. But I was just very happy kind of doing what I was doing at the time, right? Because of the people that I was working with, the mission that we had at Neerson Laboratories. Partly because, I have a close family member that suffers with addiction, and I really wanted to be involved in this space, right? Because I've seen the suffering that this can cause, right? So I was very happy, but it reached a point where I was just like, maybe it's time to do something different, right? And it doesn't speak in any way to my experience at Neerson, because it was absolutely wonderful. And the people there were the consummate professionals and taught me a lot, right?
Yeah.
But I wanted to try something different, right? Going back to like oncology and kind of immuno-oncology, which was my background kind of educationally, just wanted to kind of do that, right? So that was why. It was certainly interesting to kind of be at a company, come out of stealth mode as a young management team, and then, there's a black swan global pandemic that happens. So that was interesting. I think we were able to manage through partly because, we were gritty, but also because, we were born at a time where, we were across different geographies, New York, at the time, New York, Toronto, Hong Kong.
Mm-hmm.
And we were just used to working kind of remotely. And that's, I think, why we continue to be successful.
Gotcha.
In a low-cost way.
Was there many of you at that time in those locations? Or was it kind of like a skeleton team?
Really? Yeah, at the time in New York, there was me and another senior leader at the organization. But for most of my time at Treadwell, it was just me in New York. There was always a big group in Toronto that focused on R&D, and through 2020 and beyond, we really grew the U.S. team, mostly in California, and mostly related towards clinical development.
Yeah. How did you do that then? I guess your personal motivation? You mentioned with kind of your other company, there's that personal link that you touched upon there. How did it differ I guess, because if you've got a personal mission, it's almost something you just don't even think. With this, it sounds like you've grown, you've scaled different locations as well. How did that motivation differ, and what would you can you connect the dots between the two at all? Or
I mean, it's different, right? I mean, it's certainly a different. First of all, it's a different kind of therapeutic area, right? Mm. And the motivation is not dissimilar, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, I think it's really about, look, we're in a sector in which, you know, you can help people, you can make a difference. Right. So, I mean, there's nothing more satisfying that I've experienced professionally than being at a company and having patients being treated with the drugs that the company is attempting to develop and have those patients do exceedingly well.
Yeah.
Right. Like having leukemia patients that have like really, that respond amazingly well to the therapy, or, you know, other people with other types of cancer, like in response for years and years and years. Like it's on some level, it's the same, right? It's the same insofar as that, like it's really about kind of like helping people and bringing these programs forward. Right. It's a little, I wouldn't say it's less personal, right? Because it's like, you know, we've been
patients. Yeah.
With cancer as well, so it's like it's not like it's dissimilar, right? I think it's all about, for me in this business, it's really all about thinking about patients, right? And thinking about like how you can make a difference with patients, right? And I think if you view things through that lens, right, as senior leaders, because as senior leaders you have a fiduciary duty to your shareholders, obviously, right? That's the role. Right. But thinking about the patient and thinking about like, what is the best way to position this agent in whatever indication you're seeking to develop it in, is really, it unites the two things, right? It unites the, you know, thinking about shareholder value and developing a good product, right? Because you're thinking about the patients, because that's the end market, right? You have to think about that. And I think it unifies those two things in a good way, right?
Yeah.
Because if you're thinking about the patient, if you're thinking about the right kind of patient segment to put these drugs, that increases the likelihood of success and increases the likelihood upon success that these drugs will do well in the marketplace. That brings everything together.
Sure. But yeah. I guess just thinking out loud here, have you really, I guess, learned anything about yourself from being on both sides, one as an investor and now kind of speaking as you did kind of with your CEO hat on, talking about patients and kind of stakeholders, you need to juggle those two, but obviously there's clearly that motivation to serve the patients, etc.
Yeah.
Has that, I don't know, has it done anything kind of with your head in terms of how you now see things, having like knowing your background?
Oh, radically differently, partly because I think, like, you know, I heard a quote once that, like, if you're the CEO of a biotech company or any company, your expertise is a mile wide and an inch deep, right? You know, I think when you're an investor, it's a quarter mile wide and an inch deep. You know what I mean? So I think it's like you learn a lot about like what's necessary to succeed in this business, right? It's really about engaging with people, engaging with your staff. Right. Trying insofar as it's possible in this crazy world to make sure that your staff are happy and continue to be happy and motivated.
Yeah.
Right. So I just think it's you just learn more about the space. Right. And I think ultimately at the end of the day, you're better suited to invest in the space because I think you know a little bit more about it. Right. You know about how to develop drugs and what's a good consideration for developing drugs. I think it's this your level of knowledge and understanding of the space grows. Right. Because it's like, you know, you're thinking about things in a different way. You're certainly still thinking about things as it relates to value. Right. Because you need to. If you're building a company and leading a company, you need to propose and you need to bring forward a compelling value proposition to investors, right? But again, that feeds back into like, where can you provide the most benefit for patients, right?
Yeah.
For me, the two things are inextricably linked, right? You need to be able to find that value, right? And I think for me, it's just what you learn is you just learn broadly about drug development. You learn what needs to be done, the right people to put in place. And one thing I've learned, you know, sometimes painfully, is that what is critical to success in this business is the team. Is you know, the three most important things about drug development are team. You know, I think it's like you can have the world's greatest drug, but you're not going to be successful unless you have the right people in place to develop them. Right.
So how have you got to go again? Look, this is often my space as a recruiter, as you know. I mean, that's kind of, I talk to people day in, day out, and I would agree with you, like getting the right people in is absolutely everything. Yeah. Is there anything in particular that you do in terms of how you either assess people, bring them in, the values that they bring, the values that you have? Because you've spoken, I guess, a few times now, Mike, about kind of, it really is about serving your people. You seem to have a lot of empathy for them as well as the patients. So what is it about yourselves and how has that allowed you to grow Treadwell? Because I'd imagine if you're treating people well, there's probably quite a few people at the business, whether it's Treadwell or other, you know, where you've been elsewhere, that probably will follow you as that leader, because, you know, it's one of those things, isn't it? You know, when you're starting out, try and find a good boss, because that will do so much more for you than just joining a brand name company.
Yeah. Look, I mean, I think when we're bringing people into the organization, there's a couple things that are critical, right? I think first of all, you need to understand what motivates them, right? You need to see passion for the project. You need to see passion for the path forward, right? Because look, it's often said that developing a drug successfully is the most difficult thing that anyone can do, because you're trying to perturb biology. And a wise man once told me that biology will always win. So you're basically trying to beat something that will always win. Right. So you need to have people that are motivated, right? You need to have people that are excited about what you're doing, right? And if they're not completely committed, it's, you don't want them in your organization. The other thing that's harder to assess is kind of that cultural fit, right? And you know, I think for me, personal management has always been something that's important, right? Talking with the people, engaging with the people, making sure that they know that I have their back. But the kind of the cultural fit within the organization, it's kind of nebulous and often spoke about, but it's critical. And sometimes you don't know whether or not that fit is real until you've brought someone on board. And you can also find out that the cultural fit is not there when you bring someone on board. So, I mean, it's really, to me, it's about motivation and fit, because, you know, you can have wonderful staff, right? Really exemplary professionals, but if they don't fit into the organization, then it's not going to work out. Right. So, yeah, I mean, I think one thing that I've learned is, you know, the old adage, it's like you measure three times and cut once, right? I mean, with hiring, it's like you measure 10 times and you cut once. That's what I've learned. Because it's like, you know, we have some really, really great, inspiring people at this organization, some of whom have been with us for a long time. And you know, I admire them, right? So I think it's like in hire people that you admire. You admire their background, you admire the success that they've had, right? And to me, that's something that I've always thought about when you bring people in, because usually, you know, given kind of where I've been, when someone kind of wants, you know, throws their hat in the ring for a job at our organization, I can be like, oh, that company I know, you know, it's like you can identify people, and it's just like, you know, you kind of know the story of that experience, not the whole story, right? You see the story externally, they have the story internally, which sometimes can be dramatically different, right? But it's you know, there's a, you can identify with people, right? You can identify with kind of what their background has been, because you know the companies that they've been at, right? And because of that, it's just like, you know, I often joke with people, if it's like, if I like the companies that you've worked at, you got a foot in the door, right? Because it's like you hire people that you admire, hire people that you like and admire, and because it's like those are the people that are going to do the work, right? You're just trying to set things up for them to work in a, you know, a I'm not going to say stress-free because nothing is stress-free, but work in a comfortable way, right? Know that you support them.
I guess, I mean, yeah, with my kind of, I'm a massive sports guy. It's like when you take players from one team into another, you like that team, you like what they stand for, but in order for them to fit in, it's sometimes a case of adapting to get the best out of that individual, isn't it? It's similar in a business sense.
Sure, it sure is. I mean, let's drag out the whole football analogies, right? Like, I mean, did Real Madrid with Luis Figo and Ronaldo, did they work back in the day? Not really, right? They just put all the talent together and it's like, go do your thing, right? And then you contrast that with, you know, that Leicester team that won the title when no one thought could or would. And it was because the pieces fit together and they fit together really, really well, right? And they had a leadership that just, you know, made them feel comfortable, right? So it's like two dramatically different things, right?
I think this is the best football analogy that I've ever had from anyone in the States. I mean, one, you've called it football, but I mean, that's probably better than I could have put that together.
I know who I'm talking to, James. I know who I'm talking
to. Brilliant stuff. So how's that looked on, I guess, headcount and numbers at your end? So when you started, you mentioned it was kind of, there was a handful of you remotely, mainly. Yeah. What does the business look like kind of modern day? What's the headcount up to now?
I mean, I think there's been a lot of this, like most companies in the biotech sector, right? Like, I mean, I think it's given kind of where the markets are. We've grown and we've, you know, had to contract several times and grown. It's kind of like this, right? But, you know, I think probably we're sitting at about 40 to 50 people at this stage. Right. So we've grown quite substantially, but again, it's as you know, it's tough out there for biotech companies given the funding environment. So, you know, right size a bit, but I think it's the fundamentals of the organization still remain strong, right? I mean, we have active drugs that we continue to adjudicate. We've always been kind of cost conscious and we've always been kind of conservative on how we spend money. And that's kind of exemplified by our burn. I think it's we've grown quite substantially, right? We've grown in a number of different jurisdictions, which is always a challenge. It's been fun. It's been interesting to grow the company in the way that we have, right?
Awesome.
So we've always tried to like not grow like crazy, you know, like some companies they'll bring in money and then they'll like ring the bells and then they'll hire everyone. And then we didn't really want to do that. Right. So we've been very conservative about how we've grown the organization.
Fair enough. Well, I'll certainly encourage our viewers and listeners to jump on over to the Treadwell Therapeutics website. But I guess, you know, in your mind, has there been either one standout win, either for yourself as a CEO or for the organization collectively? Because I guess that's probably what you're going to tell me, bearing in mind what you've said about valuing staff and things. What's been the biggest success story for yourself in during your time there so far?
I mean, you know, I think you can bucket it in different ways, right? Like, I mean, I think we're all here to develop medicines, right? So I think always for me, the biggest wins are ones that are clinical in nature, right? Because those define the value of the organization and the value to patients who we all seek to serve, right? So, I mean, I won't speak to them here in this context, but I mean, there's certainly been a couple clinical wins, including some that are forthcoming that people will see in the next couple months when we present at medical congresses. So, I mean, the clinical wins are always really, really rewarding, right? Because that's basically a culmination for everything that's here, right? So to me, those are always the ones that stand out. The kind of the R&D wins are also really, really encouraging, right? When we have a couple of programs and we're trying to validate them, and then we do. And those are things that have happened recently with our R&D team headed up by, you know, Dr. Mark Bray. So those are rewarding as well. And then, you know, when we build the team, I think as we've grown and opened offices over the years, it's been very satisfying. But for me, at the end of the day, it's really about the clinical progress of our programs. And we've been seeing some really interesting things, right? We'll continue to see interesting things as the world will see in the next couple of months.
Awesome stuff. Well, look, I'll certainly be paying close attention to what's going on and on the website and on LinkedIn and things, because I hadn't necessarily come across you previously. I'll be up front, and you know, it was a complete cold call out of the blue from my end. You were polite enough to take it, and it was very nice, and here we are. So I'll definitely keep, but again, that just speaks to kind of what you've said this whole show, really, Mike, about just being very receptive, responsive, and everything else. So no, absolute hats off to you on that side of things. We'll definitely encourage people to go follow you and the business. But before I let you go, we always wrap up the show, Mike, with a bit of a quick fire questions round. So it sounds like you've had a bit of a journey with travels involved, Wall Street involved, biotech. I mean, you stopped mentioning all of those things and people were like, blimey, that's one hell of a life already. But if you were to go back in time and kind of give yourself one piece of advice to your younger self, other than make sure you continue to watch Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, what would it be?
You know what? I think it would be spend more time at larger companies, right? Because I spent some time at a large multinational pharmaceutical company, but not too much time, and it was like formative in my life.
Yeah.
So I think I would echo some of the advice that I've heard from very senior leaders in biotech. It's like spend time at larger companies, learn process.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Understand how the drug development process works at larger companies, because they have their faults in terms of their efficiency, but they know how to get things done, right? So that would be one piece of advice, right? I kind of came at it through a very circuitous route that involved Wall Street, and that's one way of doing it. Another way is like becoming a consultant and going down that route. But for me, I think it's like where you learn how to get this work done is at large, impactful organizations, large cap organizations. So that would be one piece of advice. Consider cutting your teeth at larger kind of biopharmaceutical organizations.
Awesome. Okay. And then my next question on this quick fire round is about kind of books, resources that you like personally, where it doesn't have to be work related, could just be something to relax. But yeah, number one book or resource that you'd recommend for our audience, Mike.
So I read a lot of books about biotech and drug development, to be honest. Basically biotech and high fantasy.
Yeah.
So my wife laughs at me because of that. But like one book that has always really struck me as a piece of nonfiction is a book called The Billion Dollar Molecule. And it's about the foundation of Vertex. This fellow called Josh Boger was the founder of Vertex. And it's the original concept of that company is very different than it is now. And of course, Vertex has been in the news very recently because of the first approval of a CRISPR-based medicine in Europe. So that book I've probably read 10 times. Wow. I just find it a very interesting story about the foundation of a company and how companies can change dramatically over time, because the initial concept of that company is very different than it is now. So that's a book that I've always loved, The Billion Dollar Molecule. I think there's a couple versions of it too, but it's a good read for anyone in biotech.
Awesome stuff. And look, we've talked a lot about work. I know kind of off air, you and I have talked less about work at times, but what is your favorite thing outside of work? We're all humans, clearly you've had an eventful life of travel, but what do you do to relax, enjoy yourself, whatever it may be?
Yeah, I like to keep very active, right? Mm-hmm. So, like you, James, I like to box. Probably not as good as you, but I like to box in my downtime. I like to train in different martial arts. Trained a lot in BJJ over the years and fighting arts. So I like to do that and spend time in the gym, keeping fit, doing a lot of yoga. Ultimately I like to spend time with my family, right? I took up baking several years ago. And I haven't done much of it lately due to time constraints, but I do love baking with my daughters, who are 3 and 6.
Yeah.
So that's something I love to do. And I love spending time with my beautiful wife, Jennifer. Keeping fit and trying to spend time with the family.
It's a good job that you do like keeping fit, if baking cakes with the daughters is
kind of at least. Again, James, I haven't done too much of it recently, But I think it's important.
Cool. Yeah. And look, finally, Mike, what is your, I guess, bit of a deeper one here, but what's your number one golden rule for both life and business if you were to try and wrap that one up?
Jeez. What's my number one, rule? I mean, it's so simple and so silly and kind of cliched, but I think it's really important, right? Is just like, stay happy, right? Stay happy with what you do. Try not to be too negatively impacted by what's going, like have your happiness be negatively impacted with what's going on around you, right? Because if that's the case, clarity of thought is impacted, and clarity of thought is really important, right? So stay happy, stay present. You know, I think that's important, right? Because it's very easy to be distracted by things, right? And I think staying present in the moment and not really being distracted by all the other things around you, that's really important. That's important in life and family, and that's important to work, right? It's like, be focused on what's in front of you, take worry out of the equation, and just focus on what's in front of you. I think being present is for me the most important rule for business and life. Be present in the moment.
It's a good one. Very simple, very effective. Sometimes quite hard to do. Well, Mike, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show to hear more about your story, a bit about Treadwell in there. Look, for anyone, I guess, whether it's investors, anything like that, looking to reach out to you to learn more about your journey, to learn more about Treadwell, what's the best way to get you? Website, LinkedIn, emails?
TreadwellTX.com, I think, is the best place for news about the company and awesome. You know, a means to connect to the company.
Perfect stuff. Yeah. Well, thanks again for being part of the Huxley Morton podcast. Absolute pleasure. And as I say, I'll certainly stay in touch and continue to follow your journey, my man.
Thanks, James. It was great to chat.
Top man.